Hello and welcome to Ditching Hourly. I'm Jonathan Stark. Today I am joined by David Thorpe. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jonathan. Thank you.
So David is in my group coaching and we have been having an in-depth conversation about positioning. And David, your superpower is being able to articulate all of the complexities that go into or the questions that you might have around a very squishy, intangible thing like positioning. And so I invited you on the show to help surface some of those intricacies for the listener, because I know that lots of people can get wrapped around the axle with, like, you know, what's the definition of discipline? Like, what exactly does that mean? And what's a horizontal specialization and vertical and all of these words and terms and all that? And I recognize that it does get overwhelming. It does get confusing. If it doesn't click immediately, it can be hard. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But first, just for context, could you tell folks what you do?
Sure. My company is Alpha Custom Apps, and I build custom apps for small to medium businesses. I've been a FileMaker developer most of my career, but I definitely have some other stuff, web and Swift and Mac and other things. I do have a strong focus on business analysis. I try very hard to understand the client's business problem to be sure I'm solving that, rather than, you know, maybe they called me in with some technical description of that, what they wanted. And quite often what they actually need is different to that. So if I have anything unique, I think that I have a very strong emphasis on the business analysis on top of the software development.
Great. Okay. And you're going through a sort of a transition now, or you want to refocus or maybe refine your positioning. Is that fair to say?
Like, yeah.
At least make it more effective.
Right. I've, in one form or another, I've tried to get this off the ground multiple times over many years, and I've had varying levels of success, but a lot of the failures have come from, looking back, I've seen how a lot of what I've learned from you has if I'd had that then, would have had more success. More recently, I've had, you know, more financial challenges and responsibilities. So I've had to have a day job while I try and do this. Mm-hmm. And so trying to get this off the ground while still working at something else so that I can then make a transition into this full time. Yeah. The day job's a contract, so it's going to come to an end at some point. Mm-hmm. Want to be ready for when it does.
Perfect. Okay, so I'm just going to soapbox for a second on positioning, big picture, before we jump into the specifics. So folks who have listened to the podcast or they're on my daily mailing list or whatever will know that positioning is something that I talk about quite a bit. But what is it? You know, it's easy to get into the tactics, but big picture, what is it? Positioning is basically strategic marketing. It's strategic level marketing. So it's a decision that you make about how you're going to talk about your business, and your positioning is working well if you are memorable. It's the whole point of positioning is to make your products or services or business overall more memorable, so that when someone has a need or knows someone that has a need, your name or your product or your service or your, you know, your business name is the first name that pops into their mind. So at the highest level, it's that simple. How do you talk about your business, or let's just say business, how do you talk about your business in a way that people will remember? And when the trigger happens, the result or the event that occurs from that trigger is they say, you need to talk to David. I know exactly who you need to talk to. You need to talk to David. Mm. So that's really, so then everything after that is implementation details. You know, how do we talk about our businesses in a way where it's going to be super memorable? And my favorite entry point into this, and it's the most effective when the question can be answered. So if I'm coaching someone, if the question can be answered, this is generally the most effective way to start. And the way to start is, who do you want to help? So if you, or, you know, we'll do this right now, but in general, dear listener, if you can start off with a group of people that you like and you want to help them get what they want, who are those people? Because as soon as you give me a clear definition of a target market, and we can get into different ways to define a target market, but as soon as you can give me a clear definition of your target market, then we are halfway there because I'm having a Rolodex moment. I know people that are in the target market or who know people that are in the target market. All of your friends and family know someone who's in the target market or are friends with someone in the target market. And if they then understand your value proposition, which is some other things that'll come in a second, then they will introduce you. So any marketing that you're doing, it almost pours gasoline on any kind of marketing that you're doing because it increases the speed at which the flame will spread, the awareness will spread across, the internet, your social network, whether it's digital or physical and so forth. So is there, so taking it back to you, David, when you think about groups of people that you are a part of or that you have unique insight into, what kinds of groups of people would be on that list, if any?
Yeah, and yeah, you've asked me this in the coaching, and it's something I've thought a lot about, and I'm honestly still struggling to answer that question. I am sure I'm not the only one who it's so difficult for me not to get a hung up on, well, I'd really like to help X, but they haven't got any money, so I can't build a
Classic.
business on that. Right.
Classic, yeah.
And you've mentioned that in one of your articles, and I'd love to talk about that some more at some
Sure.
point.
Yep. Well, let's do it now.
Don't
So
you've said don't worry about it. Well, I'll give you
don't
an
worry about
example.
it.
Teenagers, college kids, homeless people, young women in relationships with abusive boyfriends or husbands, and possibly kids, and how to get out of that. Those are all groups of people that I've had some experience with that I would desperately like to help, but I've always seen those as groups of people that I can only help one day when I've got money from having built a business or whatever else, doing something else.
Classic. Okay, this is classic. So let's pause, press the pause button there for a second. So I can hear the passion in your voice when you talk about those groups, and you rattled them off so quickly, right? So boom, boom, boom. And you mentioned that you've got experience with them. There's a passion there for sure. Now, here's the thing for the listener to keep in mind. You might have those things too. It's very common in my experience that people do have those things, but when I ask them what markets would you like to serve, it's not even that they're editing those out of their list and they don't say them because they decided not to. They don't even think of them because they can't imagine A, even asking for money from these groups, or B, if they were asking for money from these groups, that they could build a business that would support their lifestyle helping groups like this. And that's that blindness, that sort of subconscious editing process that eliminates those markets from your list of potential markets is something to very carefully watch out for because, the sort of facetious statement I make is like homeless people have smartphones. Like everybody's got a little bit of money. So it's not that you can't, it's just a different kind of business you need to build to serve groups in need like that will fund your mission so you can come back tomorrow and do it again. You have to fund the mission. It doesn't need to be a charity thing where, like you said, you finally I'm rich and now I can go help these people who I've been wanting to help for 20 years.
Right.
You can start helping them almost for sure. I could pretty much guarantee you could start helping them now and find a way to fund the mission that will support your lifestyle and your business goals and so forth. So that's the first thing. This is like this weird thing where people are like, I could never build a business supporting martial arts studios or fledgling guitarists or homeless people or so on and so forth. That's one thing. And the second thing is that they'll say, but or they might, and I don't know if this applies to you, but that's my next question. They might think, I would love to help one of these groups, but I don't have the skills to do it.
Yeah,
That's another one.
that's another one. And so, and that's the other thing that there are more things on my list of who I'd like to help. But what's left on my list are, well, who am I qualified to help? Who am I? Yeah, who do I
Well,
have
what
the
are some of
skills
those?
for?
What are some of the ones that you feel you're qualified to
So
help?
Well, my biggest one is FileMaker developers. My biggest experience in my career has been FileMaker. I'm a 30-year FileMaker veteran. I'm quite possibly one of the best in the world at it, and that's not my words.
Right. So that great. So now what I'm hearing there is like that is also I would put that in your skills category. The if we imagine that there are three categories that I'm trying to flesh out to fill this Venn diagram, there's a skills category where for someone to be able to say on mic recorded that there would say that they're one of the best FileMaker developers in the world. That's a wonderfully bold statement. And you said it's not my words. It's not arrogant. If you've been doing it for 30 years, it's also not surprising. So that's fabulous. I'm going to jot that down under that. But so FileMaker development and FileMaker developers are not exactly the same thing. So if you were going to serve
Right.
FileMaker developers,
So they're serving other developers that are less skilled than me and could make use of my skills in helping their clients. And then there's also serving clients of my own who have business needs that I can solve with FileMaker. That
Okay.
said, I'd like to add one little caveat to that, and that is there's a certain element of I'm kind of over FileMaker in that, and don't want to take away from what FileMaker is really good at. But the stuff that it's really good at is stuff that I enjoy less than other things that other technologies are much better at. And I've been trying to sort of expand my skill set quite extensively the last few years. And I do have some other skills. I wouldn't say I'm world class at any of those, but I'm getting better and better at them. And if there's some way to transition to using those, but then I understand that's starting to talk a bit, and this is from conversations we've had, that's starting to talk more about the implementation, not the market or the goal, or and so I'm constantly struggling with that. What am I good at? What do I enjoy? And not just what am I good at, what am I good enough at? I'm very passionate about the Mac and Apple stuff. I love Apple. I've worked for Apple at times. I'm in thoroughly entrenched in the ecosystem, and if all my clients in the business sense, outside of the other personal passions we discussed, if all my clients were purely Apple, I'd be very happy with that, and I could serve them well with a combination of my FileMaker skills and my Mac technical and development skills. But
Cool.
it's almost like there's this constant battle between what am I actually really, really good at, what am I okay at, and what do I really want to do? And sometimes they're a conflict.
Yes, yeah, exactly, right. So this is why you're such a great example, because there's
Great example of this world-class problem.
Well, it's like the reverse of an iron triangle or something. It's like three magnets that won't go together.
Right.
It's like if the people and we've talked about this in Slack, that there's well, actually I said it earlier on the show, like the easiest, most effective way usually is to pick a target market or a market that you want to help, ideal buyers, those sorts of things. Think about the other. Think about not yourself, but the other. If you start there, and your universe revolves around, or your solar system revolves around that sun, that central desire to, let's just say, help college kids, say like, okay, that's my main thing. I've got some skills that maybe could apply to that. Maybe there's a way to thread that needle. Maybe there's some overlap in the Venn diagram there, and maybe there isn't. And so maybe if the objective is to, help, I don't know, 1 million college kids escape crushing debt. If that's the goal, that's the mission, right? Then maybe some of your existing skills can be brought to bear with a lot of leverage, and maybe you have to make new skills. So that's a decision that someone would make. So you'd say, all right, if this is the most important thing to me, help college kids get out of crushing student loan debt. And then it could be that none of your skills apply, but you don't care because it's like, all right, I will just figure it out. And I will work 20 hours a week for an agency to keep the lights on while I build up the skills that I need to create some kind of revenue from this other thing, this passion project, so that I can eventually transition to doing that full time to fund that mission. Not so, so when that works, it works most frequently when somebody has a really strong desire to help this group that they want to help, and they do have some overlap. Obviously, that's easier with, with their skill set. If there's not that much overlap or no overlap, yeah, it's a heavier lift for sure. So then you need to ask yourself, all right, well, maybe second, maybe there's no great fit, maybe for whatever personal constraints, it's not the right time to be starting a new skill building endeavor. So the
Which
second
is
way.
kind of where I've concluded myself at the moment, subject to absorbing more information and possibilities from you and other sources. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm leaning at the moment,
Okay, so
personally.
and
But
it's not uncommon. It's actually more common that people are aware of them, more aware of themselves and their skills and desires and hopes and dreams and fears than they are of anybody they want to help. It's much more common that people are like that, at least in the US.
sorry, say that
So
again.
it's more it's
Much more
most
common.
it's much more common to be aware of your own kind of resume than it is for people to be more aware of, to have empathy for a particular group that they aren't in. See what I mean? It's much more
Okay.
common. Like everybody, pretty much, if you ask them, they could give you a resume type thing. Well, like I know how to do this, and I know, like for me, it's like I'm a black belt. I know martial arts. I really enjoy it. It's a passion. I'm okay at it. I'm not amazing. I couldn't be in the Olympics or any even close. I'm pretty good at guitar. I'm terrible at drums, but I love doing it. Any people know that those sorts of demographic and psychographic details about themselves. It would almost be like weird if they didn't. So, it's much more unusual for people to know those things about somebody else, like a different category of person, or in this case, college kids. So if for some reason, and when I say you in this point, I mean in general, dear
You
listener,
generic, yep.
yeah, if one knows demographic, psychographic, resume style information about a group of people that is not them, so in this case, college kids, let's say, really familiar with like the ins and outs of the current application process and how loans are distributed and grants and all so forth. If you are really familiar with what someone else is going through, if you've got empathy, if you've got enough information about this other group that you have empathy for them, then you're in the minority. I do not come across lots of people who have that kind of insight into someone who is not themselves. So it's hard to start market first, but if you can, it's really effective.
Can I
So,
throw a thought in there? Let's switch from college kids to, say, one of my other ones I mentioned, single moms who've got out of the abusive relationship with the ex, but are still tied to that guy with through their child, and he's dragging her through the courts to
Totally.
make life as miserable as possible for her. And it's all about control. He's not interested in the kid at all. He just wants something that, so I have had some personal experience with that. Not myself, obviously.
No, you're
Very, yeah, exactly. I'm that guy. No, I'm the guy that rescued one of the girls from that. And she's had to deal with that with the ex, and I've helped her through a lot of it. Very, very close friend of mine.
And I
That
too
experience.
am having a Rolodex moment. I know someone like this too. And I also know someone who has started a business to help people in this situation. So, like, I'm having a big Rolodex moment right now.
Huh, well, that's awesome. Maybe I really should pursue this instead of my software stuff. I can see how there's, I can see a potential business opportunity where if they could believe it, I could potentially save them $100,000 in legal fees by telling them, by teaching them how to navigate that system. Nearly everyone in that situation gets mauled by the guy and the courts for no reason other than they have no idea what they're doing and they can't afford the expensive lawyers.
This is so Good. This is so juicy. And I'd be curious. I'd be curious and helpful. And, it has all of the, I was just saying, it's very rare for someone to have empathy into someone who is very much not themselves, but understand the thoughts and the hopes and the dreams and the fears of somebody else. So when you have that, it is,
That's why I brought it
it's,
up.
yeah, exactly. It's extremely powerful. Most people do not have that. And when I say most, I'm saying on average, people I come in contact with, I would say more, the lion's share of people, say 80% of people can't say what you just said. Like, you just clearly described the situation and the predicament, the expensive problem, all, from someone who's absolutely not you. So that is very powerful. I'm not saying we should definitely do that or anything, or that you should definitely do that,
Right.
but it is extremely effective at being able to, create value for someone else. Like, the whole idea here is like you, one, the dear listener, if you want to make money, you need to create 10 times the value of the amount of money you want to make. So if you say, I want to have $1 million in the bank, I want to make $1 million every year, then you need to create $10 million worth of value every year. Simple.
Right.
So if somebody says to me, like, I want to have $1 million, make $1 million a year, I'm like, all right, no problem. Tell me how you're going to make $10 million of value in a year. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, I guess you're not going to make $1 million, because you have absolutely no idea how you could create $10 million worth of value annually. It's just not going to happen. So if you so you it's very and it's very difficult to answer that question, how are you going to create value, if you have no insight into a market. If you have no insight into your buyers, your potential buyers, your other potential markets, if you have no insight into them at all, it's really hard to answer the question, how are you going to create X dollars of value, if you don't even know who you're going to create the value for. Because the value is in the buyer's mind. It's not in the code you write, or the features you build, or the contracts you create. It's not in that. It's in the buyer's mind.
Yeah. So if somewhere in this conversation we would have switched to sort of my other category, which is the, the software and small to medium businesses and FileMaker developers and whatever else. You're spot on there in the biggest challenge that I've had in conversations we've had on Slack and wherever else. I've had 30 years of experience of delivering solutions to those businesses that make something easier or cheaper or more efficient or whatever for them. But I've, and this sucks that 30 years of doing that, and I don't have a good enough concept in my head of the value that that's brought to them. That's a new concept for me in the last few months working with you.
Yes, that's normal. That's normal. Most people don't think of it like that.
And yeah, so you're bringing that up sort of conceptually. I'm a great example of that. I asked you in the Slack some time ago, how do you measure? I mean, it's easy to say, yes, what I can do for you here is I can do awesome SEO on your website to multiply your leads by five. And I can see how each lead might have an average of, or out of 10 leads, they get a sale, and each sale is $100,000, whatever. And so you can kind of put dollar values on that sort of thing. But how do you put a dollar value on efficiency? How do you put a dollar value on, it just makes my staff lives easier so that they're less stressed. How do you put a dollar value on, my staff get to spend more time with their kids because they don't have to work all the long hours I've been slaving them to do so, or even I get to spend more time. This is the client talking, the business owner. I get to spend more time with my kids because you've made something more efficient. How do you put a dollar value on those sorts of things? I asked you that in Slack. You pointed me to a book
Well, let's take a
about
deep.
how to measure anything, and
Yes.
I
Yes.
looked at that. I haven't been able to get too
Yes.
deep into it yet. But
Yeah,
it's definitely something I need to do.
that book is called How to Measure Anything by David Hubbard, and it's a life-changing business book, especially if you sell services. It's actually not about business, but and it's not about value pricing, but it dramatically improved my ability to value price. But let's take a quick detour into your specific question because it's an easy answer. So your question is, how do you determine the value of decreased stress or more time with your kids? And the answer is, you don't. The buyer does. That's what the why conversation is for. So if somebody says, oh, I mean, even have a Ditcherville comic about this, where somebody said, the business owner says, oh, can you build us a new system? And the turtle says, can you build us a new system? The snail says, yeah, I can, but why? And the turtle says, well, because the current one's really inefficient. And the snail says, so what? And the turtle says, but I'm working until 8 o'clock every night to get all the data entry done. And the snail says, why does that matter? And the turtle says, well, because my wife's going to leave me if I don't start, if I miss another one of the kids' soccer games. And the snail says, how much will you lose in the divorce? And the turtle says, $10 million. And the snail says, good news, I can do it for half that. So you have to get the number, or not even, it doesn't have to be a dollar amount, but you need to get some kind of measurement out of the client. And the way that you do that is through the why conversation. So if you, because the answer will be different for every single person you talk to. What's the value of never missing what's the value of leaving at five every night? If you ask 10 people, they're going to give you 10 different answers. Some people are going to be like, I don't mind working. No family, no friends, whatever. I don't mind working. I love my job. Other people are like, I'm missing my kids' youth. And it'd almost be priceless to be able to be home all day with the kids. So it's going to be different for every person. And that's the why conversation. It helps you uncover what the transformation is going to look like, how they're going to judge the success or failure of your intervention. So, we don't, that's not really what the point of this conversation is, but the value comes from them, not from you, which is why when I walk into a sales meeting, I assume there's no value. I assume that they are either kicking tires or they got bad advice or they have self-diagnosed improperly and they say, no, we want you to do X, Y, and Z. We've got this project. We can't get it over the finish line. And I'd be like, here, to your example, the efficiency thing. They come and they say, hey, we want you to build us in a rebuild our internal systems with FileMaker. And I would say, why? And it's hard because, when I was a FileMaker developer, I was excited about doing that. Like, oh yeah, I love building FileMaker. I can build, I can, I would love to rebuild it from scratch. So I'm all excited to like to spec out the scope and knowing how many tables, how many portals, how many layouts, how many scripts, what about the business logic, blah, 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 blah. And when I broke that habit, and I instead in the meeting, I would say, they'd say, oh, we really need you to rebuild our internal systems. And I'd say, why? And they said, because we can't get the invoices out on time. And I would say, well, what do you mean? Like, how, give me more specifics. And they'd say, like, oh, well,
Where does it go wrong?
the woman who does our accounts payable is working like, weekends every week. She's working 7 days a week and she's in my office every day complaining about it and I understand why it's unfair. And I would say, well, why don't you just hire another AP person? Just like throw 45 grand at like a part-timer or maybe, maybe more, whatever the going rate is, and just hire someone else to use the existing system. Done. And if they say, oh, we didn't think of that, then I know there's no reason. It's a bad idea. Like they self-diagnose wrong. But if they say we can't do that because we want to 10x the business and we can't afford to hire, or we don't have space, or we don't want to manage 10 more people, then now we're talking. So they absolutely do have to solve this problem with software. So I've answered my first why question, which is why this? And say, okay, so you want to 10x the business. How are you measuring that 10x? Is it revenue? Is it profit? Is it market share? Is it headcount? And then they would answer. And I would say, all right, why do this now? Why not put this off for a year? And they just go through the why conversation. And eventually you'll have all of the details. So you've gone from a cost savings kind of efficiency, increased productivity kind of thing to without this new software system, you aren't going to be able to 10x your business, and converted it into a growth mentality instead of a sort of a poverty mentality or a cost cutting mentality.
Right.
Anyway, so that's a detour. So let's get back to, I want to get back to markets. You mentioned a bunch of really, really specific markets. And then you said, and then the last one you kind of tacked on there was like small and medium business owners, which is like, I don't know, 10 million businesses or something. So do you have, so here's the normal process I'd go through with someone who tells me that, which is extremely common. Are there any common denominators across the people you have worked with? Could be vertical, could be contact person, could be title of contact person, could be locale, physical location. Are there any common denominators with your past clients?
If anything, it would be the short answer to that, and then there's a slightly less short answer, and I hope we have time for both. The short answer is probably the most common is the business owner, as in these businesses are small enough that it's the business owner making the having the communications and making the decisions and whatever else, rather than some middle management guy. So I've had plenty of dealings with those middle management guys, but the small business owner is, you asked for the common denominator. Aside from that, this is certainly my biggest problem, and I imagine I'm not unique in this, and that is your own experience with FileMaker. You can build a FileMaker solution to solve almost anything in any industry, any business, and almost any size even. And because of that, I've worked with one of everything. Maybe two or three at the most, but nothing's really stood out as this is the one that is really going to nail it kind of thing. And
So let's explore it a little bit. Is
yeah,
there one that
that's the
stands out?
big problem.
Sure. Yeah, it's like a it's you and when I was a FileMaker person, we were presenting ourselves to the world with a platform specialization. We're specialized on a platform, and it's slightly different than a horizontal specialization because the buyer knows it. The buyer knows about it. So the buyer, the owner of the small business, knows that they picked this platform. So
Yes,
it's
good
slightly
point.
different. It's a little bit different than let's say you're a SQL Server performance expert. The business owner might not know that SQL Server is the thing that's running NetSuite or whatever. I don't know what uses
Their
SQL
IT
Server,
manager probably knows, but
but not
business
the
owner doesn't
buyer.
care.
You can pull off a platform specialization, which is a subset of a horizontal, and it's meaningfully different because your ideal buyer does know about it. They might have been the one that picked it, so they have a vested interest or a sunk cost or a, you know, they don't want to switch horses later because then that's going to create cognitive dissonance with their past decisions and their current decisions. So they're kind of trapped a little bit. There's inertia at least to stay with
Better the
the,
devil, you know.
that's one way to put it. So that's okay. So you're dealing with an owner. The owner knows they have FileMaker in every case, right? Your
Nearly every case,
contact.
if not every case, yeah.
Okay, so it's a platform specialization. So it goes without saying they all had FileMaker. And what is the, are there any that stand out where you feel like the business just massively benefited? Like, was there any casual comment or a testimonial or some kind of meeting where they were just like, this work that you did for us completely changed the game. And now we've got, you know, just a casual comment, anything like that. Is there anyone in your history that stands out as like, wow, I think I really hit a home run for these people?
Usually when I've had that feedback, so most of my FileMaker career has been working for bigger companies that charge me out to them.
Got it. Like
To,
agency
and
through an agency.
it, right. And so I've worked mostly with the internal project manager, internal to the company that I worked for. Had some dealing with the client, and certainly a relationship with the client, but most of the feedback, went back to the project manager and not directly to me.
How much client contact would you have on? I am. You must have had some client contact, or did you have completely
Oh,
have like,
yeah.
okay.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'll say that. So I don't know that I've ever had anybody say, yeah, this FileMaker solution totally, changed our lives kind of thing. Most of the time it's been, yeah, this is great. You guys did a great job for us. It's helped fix this, this, and this. You helped. You
You
made
cut our
things get
costs.
right. You made things get 20% better or 10% better. They wouldn't even say those numbers, but that's the vibe that I'm sort of getting. It's an improvement, but it wasn't life changing. And I don't know that I've ever done anything that was, the business version of life changing for anyone. I think part of the problem there is the companies I've worked for, they weren't. They were very much time and materials, and so they didn't even think about the value to the client. They were just, you need this done right. Here's our hourly rate. And it discovering you was something that changed that, but that's only a recent development for me. And so, yeah, it's unfortunately I can't give you a good answer to that one, which is part of the problem.
So as a tip, and too much time might have passed between any of these engagements and now. But an approach for people who are listening that are in this situation is to reach back out to clients that you had a you felt like you did a really good job for. You're on good terms. Maybe you haven't talked in a while, but you could say, "Hey, I'm updating my website, and I would love it if I could send over a few questions for you to answer about the project that we worked on together." And they will almost always say yes, and then you can send over the questions. And from a template that I have, you send over the questions, and they will take 3 months to get around to it, almost for sure. But eventually, if you send these particular questions, eventually what you'll get back is a unbelievable testimonial that goes beyond, "He was a great guy, she was a great gal, never, talked down to us, always was responsive." This is hygiene. This is
Always
like,
met the
yeah, these are that
deadlines.
that is hygiene for professionals. It's like, great, she had clean fresh breath. But
Had a shower every day.
yeah, but these questions will produce numbers from the client. It will produce, they could be estimated numbers, they could be absolute numbers, or they could be relative numbers. But these questions will produce tangible business out or descriptions of meaningful business outcomes that the client experienced from your engagement. And they will always, always, always be higher level than anything like, "The code was so elegant," or "They were, always hit the deadlines," like you said, or the, it's not going to be about that. They're going to talk about higher level business things like, "I got a promotion after this project went live," or "We doubled our business after this project went live," or "We were afraid we were going to lose our biggest whale client before the customer portal went live," or "We blew our competition out of the water based on these three metrics after the project went live." They're going to talk about stuff like that. All of the little details that we worry about when we're creating these solutions and we're down in the trenches are totally immaterial if it worked. So it becomes, you get these testimonials back, and then you can start to learn from your own testimonials from 3 years ago, projects that you did 3 years ago, what the clients actually value, how they measure it. And then you can bring that information into new sales meetings or sales interviews when you're having the why conversation and be like, "I want to figure out," it's almost like you're reverse engineering the testimonial you want. It's a funny way to think about it. So it's like, what testimonial do I want from this client in 6 months or 12 months when this project is done? I want them to say that this revolutionized our business or this increased our something. So the why conversation is designed to figure out in advance how the client is going to judge the success of the engagement, so that you can make sure that that's the needle that you concentrate on moving, and you move it, and you don't get distracted with merely best practices or merely what the boots on the ground people are telling you. Like the actual end users are like, "Oh, the tab order needs to be like this." It's like, okay, that's good to know, because I want you to adopt this system and I want you to love this system. But the business owner is the one that's going to be like, "We doubled our productivity. We were going to have to hire four people, and we didn't have to when this went live." So some they're always going to get some kind of answer like that if you use the right questions.
Do have
You do have one?
one. I thought of one as you were describing all that.
Awesome.
As in something you said triggered the memory. And actually, it's not much of a memory that it escaped me because it's my current one. I delivered something just a couple of weeks ago that the NDAs and all that kind of stuff. I have to be
Sure,
careful what I
sure.
say, but it has saved him hours and hours and hours at a time that is very, very time sensitive. It's related to when the certain piece of information that becomes available to him, and he has to do something with that information and deliver a result ASAP. And it was taking him most of the day, and I gave him a solution that does it in 35 seconds. It hasn't changed his life because this particular day in his life happens maybe once every couple of months. But that day or those 2 days every couple of months, it's changed that part of his life dramatically, and he's had nothing but praise for me because of it. Unfortunately, people higher up are the decision makers as far as and this is, so this is where you have another problem sometimes. Stop me if I'm straying too far aside, but
Nope, I think I know
sometimes
where you're going. Yeah, go ahead.
the person whose life you change isn't the one who's paying the bills, and the guy who's paying the bills maybe doesn't care enough about that particular staff member's life you changed.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that's the case. If anybody's joining any dots here, I'm not saying that's the case here in my situation, but it made me realize that that could be the case in some circumstances, and I think it might be relevant to the conversation. Is that where you thought I was going?
100%. Yep.
Yeah.
So here's the example that I use. It's like the difference between the user and the buyer, or there's a decider sometimes that's separate from the economic buyer. But I remember talking to someone who was extremely connected in the K through 12 education space and was passionate, just on a mission to make teachers' lives better. And she was like, how am I going to sell this, big consulting slash training
Right.
engagement to
The people that pay the money.
the people that, right, to the school board
Right.
and or whoever, the mayor, the whoever's in charge of the you could have been a principal or could have been higher level, like a higher level administrator. And I was like, well,
Right.
what's in it for them? And she said, well, the teachers will be teaching better. And I said, what's in it for the buy? What's in it for the principal?
Yeah. He doesn't
And
care about the kids.
no, work harder,
No.
get a substitute, right? They
Right.
have different problems that they're, should they care about the kids? Of course, but that's not their primary concern. They are not staying awake. It's not my job, that's someone else's job. I'm doing everything I can to create an environment for the teachers. I'm between a rock and a hard place. They're worried about different things. So I was explaining to this person, like, if you want to sell something that is going to make the teachers' lives better, you either. And she had a specific thing that would do it. So she had this sort of, let's call it a product, like a training
A
product that
specific
would,
solution.
yeah, she had a specific solution. I
Right.
said, you're either going to have to sell it to the teachers, or you're going to have to connect the dots between this solution and something that the superintendent cares about,
Right.
or
When
it's
you say
never going to
sell it to
sell.
the teachers, you mean sell it to them to the point where they're willing to pay for it?
Yeah, out of pocket. So this
Okay.
guy that you just, you saved a, 8 hours, but 8 hours every couple of months, how much would he have paid for that personally? $1,000?
That's a great question. I have no idea.
Five
I
thousand
mean,
bucks? You have some idea. Would
I
he have
guess
paid
so.
$100,000?
No.
No, because he could have hired someone to do it for him. Like that, to
Yeah.
me, whenever we're talking about like a software system that increases productivity or efficiency, I always go straight to why not just hire someone? And there'll be a reason. If the reason is money, then I know that there's probably no project. Like, oh, we can't afford
Right.
to hire a person to do it. We would hire someone, but we can't afford it. I'm like, there's no project here. If they could easily, especially easily, afford to hire someone, but they have a reason that they can't, or that that's not going to fit with their strategy, or something like that. Now my radar perks up, my spider sense starts to tingle. I'm like, okay, there's something here, because they've got an objective or a strategy or something that doesn't allow them to merely hire and use a brute force approach. So they do need software. So okay, so
How
I
much would
just.
he have paid for it? Yeah, that's a tough one. There's so many other variables in that question in this case. I mean, he's part of a big company that has all kinds of cultural rules, and so even if you could have paid for it, the company may not have let him, or things like that. Who knows? That's all the stuff that went through my head when you asked that question.
Well, maybe you could have sold. So here's the thing: you could have maybe sold a training solution that he would surely have been able to put on his own credit card that would teach him how to build the thing you built, or who knows? I mean, there's all these other ways that he or she could have scratched that itch theoretically.
Yep. Good point.
Okay. So I just wanted to kind of go in a little bit deeper detail there, because there it is important. It's like, if you have a solution that makes the soldiers' lives better, you still have to sell it to the general, probably, right, unless the soldiers are willing to buy their own boots. But like, you need to connect the dots to the higher ups, because you're almost for this kind of work, I'm not going to say almost always, but for this kind of work, the value is going to be higher the higher up the organization you go, because the decisions that they make farther up the organization have more downstream effects. So every decision that someone at the top of the organization makes can affect everyone under them. So it's multiplied by 10 or 100 or 1,000 employees. So if somebody makes a productivity decision at the very top of the food chain, it's very important. You know, it's like the beginning of the assembly line. If you screw up the Mercedes design, if you screw up the design of the headlights or the brakes on a Mercedes, and then that design gets turned into tools and machines and a procedure and an assembly line, and you are just reliably producing Mercedes with bad brakes at the other end of the line, that's a big expensive problem. You know, if we're talking about like someone who's on the assembly line who needs a better pair of gloves because it really hurts my hands doing this job all day long, it's a totally different value proposition. But if having the gloves can be connected to producing better brake designs and reducing defects in the field, now all of a sudden you've got something really interesting. See what I mean?
I'm just, my head's racing with ways I might be able to spin that here, but spin's the wrong word, but you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It may just be that the company's too big and political in this example. But
that's possible.
I guess the highlight really there was, though, that, you know, yes, I have been able to do something to change someone's life. Now I need to connect the dots and find how to change the life of someone who is making the financial decisions instead of one of the soldiers.
Right. So it's usually going to look like...
That's what I'm going to get from that.
Sure. So let me ask you another question about these sort of businesses, that this small and medium businesses you've worked with through these intermediaries. What's the sort of smallest headcount in terms of employees, just roughly, like on an order of magnitude, like 10 people, one person, 10 people, 1,000, 100?
Maybe 3 to 5 would be the smallest.
And then what's the biggest? Like hundreds of thousands?
I guess I would say less than 100, probably even less than 50. Mm. Now, sometimes we're dealing with a department in a much bigger company. Mm-hmm. But the department itself is internally managed and run enough that I would consider that department would be the client, not the whole company.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. So if in that context, probably 50 would be the upper limit, maybe 100.
Okay. All right. It's super common in the FileMaker space. Super common.
Right.
So if we said anywhere from 3 to 100 employees affected, you know, underneath the particular owner.
Could we go with 50? That's probably more common.
All right. So 50 to 100?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No, 3 to 50, I mean.
Okay. 3 to 50.
Yeah.
All right. So then if we just skew to 50 and even go beyond that and skew to 50 to 100, because I think it would be likely, well, 50 is about, because you can get a FileMaker developer full time for like, call it 90, let's say. I'm just going to, just roughly, I could be up by 20,000 in either direction, depending on factors, but let's say it's 90K for a full-time FileMaker developer. Then you need to find a sweet spot where it doesn't make sense for them to hire someone full-time, or maybe they have someone full-time, but it's their junior and this is above their pay grade or something like
There's also the management cost and all that kind of stuff that, you know, and the business analysis and whatever else that we bring to the table as well, which could be another $100,000 salary.
Okay, so if we skew to, say, let's just keep it at 50. I like that number. If you skew to 50 and you know that your ideal buyers have FileMaker, can you imagine any ways to find a list of companies and ideally owners of companies and ideally contact information for the owner that would fit into this? I would call it a demographic. I would call it demographic. It's like it's not technically a demographic, but I would call it, it's kind of like if you're going to ask your network of friends, hey, do you know anybody who is the owner of a business that employs around 50 people? Then you're going to get it'd be very easy for everyone you know to say yes or no to that question. And
Yes.
then secondarily, they probably won't know whether or not they have FileMaker, but secondarily, you could sort of just reach out to those. You could send an email and say, like, hey, do you use FileMaker? And maybe get, I don't know, maybe zero results, maybe one or two. But so the FileMaker thing is a little bit, maybe there's an outside signal. What would be a way for you to make a list? Where would you go to try to make a list of companies that had about 50 employees and were using FileMaker?
Where would I go to make a list of companies about 50 employees that I know are using FileMaker without asking them? That's the million-dollar question. maybe Claris. I mean, you could Claris is the for those who don't know, Claris is the company that makes FileMaker. I mean, you can go to you can join the FileMaker Business Alliance program. I think it's called something else now. But they can steer you to these sorts of companies. But that's not really answering your question. And the answer is I don't know, I guess. And I guess that's part of the problem. I don't know.
Well,
You
here's
tell
some.
me. Coach.
I've been down this road and it's pretty hard for FileMaker because FileMaker is not an up and coming hot platform. It's amazing at what it's good at. To this day, I still maintain that it is amazing for what it's good at. It stinks when people try to use it for something it's not good at, but that's neither here nor there. So.
Well, that might be here or there because I mean that does speak to my desire to move into other directions. And I've definitely, and I don't know if this is relevant, shut me down if it is, if it isn't, but I would even challenge any FileMaker developer to expand their skills and instead of focusing on the platform, focus on the problems they're trying to solve. And this is part of what I've got from you. Except that it's hard to do. A lot of FileMaker developers are really good at FileMaker and not much else.
Yeah, preaching to the choir here. I mean,
I can plug myself as having learned, made myself learn a bunch of other stuff, partly for the benefit of integrating it into FileMaker solutions, which is becoming more and more of a need these days. But also because sometimes FileMaker is not the best solution to the problem. And that's actually what happened with this more recent gig that I changed this guy's, some small piece of this guy's life. He hired me as a FileMaker developer, but the solution is a Node JavaScript one primarily with a FileMaker one layout and FileMaker as the UI.
Yeah,
And
so
he got lucky because he wasn't expecting that. That 35 seconds probably would have been an hour in FileMaker, right? Which is why I did it that way. So,
Yeah, so
is it
point
my
taken.
question to you is it the wrong question to look for the FileMaker
I think in general,
companies?
it's a sh short answer, yes, but long answer, let's explore it just to show people how to do it. So I
And
do
if it's
think.
if it's your only skill, then it's a great place to start, right? Is another reason why you're doing this.
Or if you have a more modern, more current, hip platform, it's a great place. So if you can, the beauty of a platform specialization is that you get to piggyback on the marketing of the platform. So right now, something like NetSuite is tearing it up. So if you put NetSuite developer on your LinkedIn profile, you're going to be buried with requests. So you're not, if you say FileMaker developer, you're not, because FileMaker is not the hot new thing. And it is, or any platform that's been around for 10 or 20 years, it's generally either it's not the hot new thing, and there are probably loads and loads and loads of people who call themselves, whatever,
FileMaker developer.
Salesforce developer, FileMaker developer, Rails developer at this point, iOS developer. Like, it's old news. Like, the commoditization has more than just begun. So you end up in a, you end up in a differentiation warfare. But let's just say that you consider yourself a platform specialist at whatever platform it is, and you were going to target companies that had 50 or so employees. I would go to Sales Navigator in LinkedIn. I would search for companies that have 50 employees, between whatever 40 and 60 employees, somewhere around there. And maybe you pick a region. Maybe it's local to you. Maybe it's your country. Maybe it's a different country because you don't want to focus on people in your country. But you maybe pick a region, and then you look for admins that have FileMaker on their resume. If they have it on their resume, then you can DM them and say, "Hey, do you guys use FileMaker at Boom, your current job?" And because you focus it down to companies that are the size that you want to work with, and then you'd be like, "Oh, well, you get a yes or no." Like, yeah, you're not trying to sell something to the admin or whoever, customer service or something like that, but you could just connect with people who are lower down the food chain in these 50-person companies and just say, "Do you guys use FileMaker there?" And then you're going to get yeses and nos. And then you'd be like, "Okay, I know which companies that are 50 people." And then you can connect with the owner with some kind of value proposition, or maybe you're going to say, this is a different topic, but you would connect with the owner in some way that is going to make their life better, add value, make their life better, and start a conversation.
How do you know
So,
that beforehand, though?
which part?
The connect with them in some way that might make their life better. And this also speaks to another challenge I have had with some of your teaching, and that is you've said a lot about, I've seen a couple of your question answers videos, whatever, about how do sales averse people do this stuff? And there's a theme in some of your answers in that, well, that's what the why conversation is. It's sort of making the assumption that they've sought you out because they've got this life-ending problem that you can solve potentially, and you're almost trying to push them away. That feels contrary to the what we're talking about now, which is we're approaching them. We're saying, what problems do you have that we can solve?
Nope, that's not
And
what I said.
fair enough. Okay.
I didn't say that we can solve. I didn't say that we can solve.
Right. Yes, you're right. You're right. You didn't. Okay. So what problems do you have? Somewhere in there's going to be a conversation about, well, maybe I can solve it for you. But that's going to change the dynamic of that why conversation when you
Nope,
ask.
no, it doesn't. So here, and I know I
Because
get this.
I'm in this.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I get
right. I'm
this
in
all
this
the time.
situation. Right. I'm talking with a client, potential client of my own right now, and I keep asking myself, how am I going to have this why conversation when I'm a lot more aware of their problem than they are? And if I ask them, why do you want to do this? I'll say, because you told me to, because you told me these reasons why it's good. Now they do relate, they do connect with the reasons,
Okay,
but
so
they have only my word to go on.
So that means you led the witness too much in the conversation so far.
Yeah.
It's
Okay.
not unrecoverable, but just, for people's benefit and for future reference, when you reach out to people and you just if first when you're doing market research, let's say you're a NetSuite developer, well, let's stick with FileMaker. You're a FileMaker
Oh, yeah.
developer because it's trickier. So you reach out to people, you find companies that are currently using FileMaker that are in your demographic range, 50 people, and you connect with the owner. And it's hard to, these are hard messages to write, but the concept of what you want to say is you want to take some piece of information that you do know about this specific person in order to not write a spammy, irrelevant message to them. That's that is case by case. Otherwise, it would be by definition kind of spammy. So I can't put words in your mouth, but you need to find something about their company or in their social media profile or something that creates a genuine question for you. But if you just want a boilerplate, templated kind of answer, you could a question to ask, a decent one in absence of all others is, can you tell me what your biggest problem is with regard to FileMaker right now, or really whatever the platform is, and see if we don't really have a problem with that. Or they say something like, let me guess, performance, or let me guess, we can't, it keeps crashing, or we can't keep the, we need to move it into the cloud, and we're not sure how to do it. So like, So if
Or
you
we've
have,
got these six little features that we'd love to add to it.
sure. Yeah. So you could, it's not the greatest, but it's not bad. But the bigger picture is I would like it better if you had, you could do, I mean, I know real sales guys that are just cold callers that would call the admins and ask and just get back channel complaints about the system and then bring them to the CEO and say, "Hey, I heard that your customer service people are really upset with the way the FileMaker system's running." And you could, I don't do that, but you can, people can do that. But anyway, so the big
Okay.
picture is, big picture, you want to identify some companies where they use the platform that you work on, connect with them, and start a conversation in a non-spammy way. And that is an art that I work with people on one-on-one, but it's not easy. But you can do it in the conversation. So when you want to pivot from market research, or I'm writing a book, or I'm doing a poll, whatever the connection request is, I'm doing research for a report, and I'll share it with you after the fact. When you finally do talk to them, or when you do pivot and you say, "Look, we should set up a call to see if there'd be a good fit for us to work together," not, "We should set up a call so I can tell you why you should hire me, or I can try and
Right.
convince you to hire me." You cannot chase them in these initial conversations. Otherwise, you get into the exact problem that you identified, which is like,
Right.
it makes no sense for you to try to talk them out of working with you with the why conversation if you've been pursuing them. It'd be like if you were like asking out the girl at high school over and over and over, and then she finally said yes, and you'd be like, "Oh, I don't know, let me check my calendar."
Why do you want to go out with me?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, right? So in your
Great, great
outreach,
analogy.
yeah, just be like, "What is wrong with you?" Right? So
Yep.
in the it,
That's so spot on.
right. So it's like you need to attenuate, or you need to have those met when you send out those outreach. But when you initiate the conversation, that's the best way to put it. When you initiate the conversation, it can't be about, "Let me pitch you on my services."
Right.
It has to be about, maybe there's a good fit, and
You want to talk about it.
Maybe there's some public information that you know that their system crashes, like when the J.Crew website kept going down on Black Friday, like 2 years in a row, or maybe there's some outward signal. They're probably not, though. In the FileMaker space, this is pretty difficult. I mean, what are we up to? FileMaker like 15 or something? It's
Not 19.
19, so it's not
Yeah.
exactly an immature product. So the battle lines have been drawn, and it's pretty. I mean, I work with you're not the only FileMaker person in my room, so it's like, it is hard. So, but I did
And
want
it's mostly hosted in-house, which means it's not something that's out
tough to
there on the
deal with,
internet.
yeah.
Yeah,
Tough to
you
find, tough to
can't.
deal with.
Yeah, exactly.
So, folks, so the reason I went through this whole thing is to kind of illustrate how you would do it
This is
if
great.
had a platform specialization, but it is not my favorite. It is not my favorite. I would much rather do the thing that you were alluding to in your previous aside, where the tool doesn't matter. If you want a new garage, I'm not gonna be like, "Oh, I'm an expert with DeWalt table saws. Like, would you want me to table saw anything for you?"
All right.
I'm an expert with DeWalt tools. Do you want your garage built with DeWalt tools? I don't care what you build my garage with. I just need a garage where I can, I don't know, have like an extra rumpus room for the kids who are like getting to an age where they need to go outside, but it's snowing. So, what are my needs? Focus on my needs. And then if you find someone who has needs that you can serve with your tools, great. But focusing on the tools is tough.
Could we go back a little to again, stop me if I'm going away from where you want to go.
Okay.
So back to the ha having the why conversation with someone who you've essentially had to persuade them of the need. And I'll give you
No,
a
yeah. See,
concrete example if you like.
please
Well,
do, but
it's very likely I said that wrong, and I
okay.
apologize. And I know I put some words in your mouth earlier. You corrected me, and I apologize for that. And thank you for correcting me. Let's
Yeah,
I
plow forward.
Jonathan's the authority here, not me.
Yeah.
So,
But let's say you're in this situation, yeah.
Right. So now, to my credit, I haven't pushed it really hard. Mm-hmm. It has come from a scenario where so the client has repeatedly, the client loves me. I took over from somebody else who sort of almost kind of screwed her over. Mm-hmm. Not intentionally, just was pretty incompetent. I fixed it and have done a lot of little incremental improvements to her program over the years. And she thinks I'm the greatest thing since whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. the system is so convoluted. It's overkill for her needs. It's 25 years old. It's a whole bunch of things that mean any incremental, any bug I fix takes three times as long mm-hmm. as would take any new feature I add. It all takes so much longer because of ripples and because of what else is it going to affect and what else am I going to break by doing this and so on
mm-hmm.
with that a much more modern, better written system and one that I'm more familiar with if I wrote it myself
mm-hmm.
would produce. So her financial benefit is if you see this evolving over and over over the years, you might pay me $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 right now
yep.
to build you something completely new that does everything your current system does and no more first.
Yeah.
You're 50 grand in the hole or you're 20 grand in the hole, but every time you ask me to fix something or improve something, it costs a third of what it would otherwise cost if we keep doing it with your system. Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, you're going to be in front. And I warrant with the amount of things you've asked me to do, it's going to be sooner rather than later.
Okay, so this is good. So I'm glad you did persist on this one because it's a different scenario.
That's my scenario, and she's sold on the idea, but she's still very budget conscious. And I've worked for her by the hour, and I'm trying to transition her over to. We talked about her in the coaching. You might be able to remember who it is. She loves me. She'll hire me to do it, but it's about getting the price right.
Yep. Okay.
Among other things.
Okay, so this is a different scenario. Yep, this is a different scenario than cold outreach to like people you don't know. So you've already got trust.
It's still a very difficult why conversation. Just to clarify what I'm asking.
Yes. So I would characterize it differently. There's a thing above the why conversation that I don't talk about very much because people who can do it don't really need it described to them. They just do it. So, and it's the first I've heard of it was from Oren Claff in Pitch Anything, and he calls it a cold read, where you can walk into a meeting with someone who's in your target market and just by casual observation know what their expensive problems are before you even ask them any questions. So you don't need to ask them any questions. Like if you look at if you deal with companies like, I don't know, SaaS companies that are on the scale of like, say, a Slack. And there's this upstart, maybe somebody like Twist or Mattermost or some Slack competitor that's not making progress. If you were an expert in this space, you could walk in and say like, look, let me guess.
I know what your problem is.
Let me guess. You can't grow. Everything you do is just like, why don't we use Slack? You can't answer the question. There, you know, you're drowning in technical debt, blah, 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 blah. And you just dress them down. If that's maximum empathy, we were talking about empathy earlier. This is like super duper maximum empathy where it's just so boring to you that you're almost just like sick of it. You just walk in, you're like, let me stop you before we start here. I'm just going to tell you what's happening. And then you just like, boom, boom, boom. It doesn't have to be done in an arrogant way. But when you're in a cold scenario, when you've never worked with the client before, usually people can't do that. If they can, then that's the way to go. You don't need to have a why conversation. Somebody that could do a cold read would never do a why conversation because they already know all the answers.
Ah, right.
But most people, they are not, most people walk into a meeting like that, you know, that I work with. Most people walk in looking for scope so that they can do an estimate that's probably half as low as it should be. So,
right.
So that's why I talk about the why conversation so much. But now in a situation where you you can kind of do a cold read on this client because you're inside the client. They trust you. You're the expert as far as she is concerned. And you do know, not because you're familiar with the industry and you just know what people like her are like, but you know for her, like here's the situation. You could say like, look, I know you don't have, this is the kind of budget, this is the kind of money the system's generating or the business is generating. These are the kinds of problems that we've been encountering. Obviously, you remember we've been encountering these. You remember when I told you this should have taken me, a third of the time that it did, but because the thing is brittle, you remember that I keep telling you. You remember all the times I told you that I can't build that feature because
I
it's
don't know
going to
what else
break
it's
the
going to
whole
impact.
system, or right, or there's a risk. There's all this risk. Now,
Half the time, it's I don't even know.
so,
And
but
that's
here's the
not because
thing.
I'm deficient. It's because no one knows. No one could possibly know
Right. So
without
she's.
tearing it apart, spending enough, as much money and time as you would spend to build the new one anyway.
Right. So what we're talking about technical debt, and we're talking about risk.
Yes.
And cost, of course, but that's kind of part of the risk. So the question is, how proactive do you want to be, dear client? Like I'm going to keep on raising this red flag. Like this system is eventually going to grind to a halt one way or another. Either the development cannot persist, or or it literally just gets slower and slower, or eventually it. The software gets deprecated, or the underlying operating system gets deprecated, and you're forced to move to an operating system that isn't supported because the hardware is just failing. So eventually, you're going to get kicked off of this plank that you're walking. So do you want to react to that when it happens, or do you want to start taking steps now to prepare for the inevitability of this? And she could say, you know what, David, I am only going to be in this business for 3 more years. Just patch this thing for 3 more years, and I'm going to retire, and I don't need to spend 50 or 100 grand to rebuild it from scratch for 3 more years.
I
Or,
have been there. Great example.
yeah, or she could say, no, I'm only 25, I'm only 35. I plan to do this for, I want to expand this. I want this to be the thing I do for the next 20 years. This needs to be a platform for growth. I want to expand the business. I want to bring more people on. That's going to put more load on the system. So I'm willing to invest in a new foundational platform, a platform that will be a foundation for the growth that I am imagining. So it's not like right or wrong. Like I've been there 100 times with this like pile of garbage that you inherited from somebody else. Every developer's been there. Every developer's been there, and it always feels like it would make my job so much easier if I could just rewrite this from scratch, and then I could charge them less money because of this hourly rate. That doesn't make it a good idea. It does not inherently make it a good idea. You need to still have the conversation. Like, so if you go in with her and you say, like, look, I know I've been pointing out all of the deficiencies of the system and how it's going to affect you over time. So I would love to have a conversation. And as a craftsman or a craftsperson in this space, it pains me to see you limping along with this thing. And it pains me to even touch it or work on it. So I know I've been encouraging you to consider a rewrite. But from a financial standpoint, it might not be the smartest move. So what I'd like to do is have a conversation around your longer term business goals, how you see this solution or this software system fitting into your bigger picture business goals. And maybe it'll turn out that patching this pile of junk is the smartest thing to do. I've told the story many times about, I'm not a car guy. I've always bought, until recently, have always bought used junker cars. And the idea of bringing a $500 Geo Storm into a mechanic and them saying, oh, it needs a $5,000 transmission replacement is like, yeah, I know it needs that, but I just need to keep this thing running for 6 more months and then I can buy a new junker. So everybody recognizes that the thing needs a new transmission. That's not the question. The question is spending the money and the time and effort and everything else on installing the new transmission, is that a smart move? When I would drive a junker, no, that wasn't a smart move. Now that I have like a proper adult car, it makes sense for me to go in and pay for a warranty or periodic maintenance and so forth because I didn't spend $500 on the car. I spent quite a bit more. So it's like, it makes sense. So it's just a different mindset. It's not that one way is right and one way is wrong. So you need to figure out is, does she think she's just trying to, does she just want to patch the junker for 6 more months? Perfectly valid desire. Or does she want to, start fresh with something more professional and adult, for lack of a better term, and that is going to be more reliable. It doesn't matter. She doesn't have to worry about it breaking down on the highway, so to speak.
Right. If you're asking me, I can answer that.
So if you
Are
know
you
the
asking me?
answer, just to play it out.
Yeah, okay. So the answer is she absolutely recognizes the need for the newer solution. And she's in support of it. She's basically said, yes, let's do it, but I haven't given her a price yet. And I'm not sure where her This is where, how do I figure out the value of this to her is
Okay.
my big challenge.
Why does she support it?
She has experienced my, she's experienced the challenges I've had to face and have had to, one way or another kind of pass on to her with she had a whole bunch of things she wanted me to do to it. I could do some of the small ones. I couldn't tell her how much it was going to cost until afterwards because didn't know, and I still don't know. And some of the changes that I have made recently, I don't know for sure that it hasn't caused ripples throughout the system. I don't know for sure that it isn't going to break something else, and she doesn't either, obviously. And so all of this is, it's a risk thing. She recognizes the risk. She does want a new solution. She does want something that's going to last her more long term.
And how would she like, what's long term for her?
That's a good question that I probably need to ask her. I would, from what I know of her, indefinitely, but and until it will no longer serve the purpose. She's, I don't know, she's, I think maybe mid-40s or something. So it's her business. She wants to keep going for, I would estimate, at least another 10 or 20 years.
Okay. So
So
there's the converse, that's the beginning of the conversation. So it's like, so, and I recognize that it's a little awkward because you've already had conversations around other things, and it sounds like at least the stuff you've shared so far is around like, look, this is just going to keep costing you more and more by the hour for me to keep patching this, and we're increasing the likelihood of a failure,
yes.
and we're increasing the uncertainty around the cost. So you kind of what you want to say or what you want to get to is like, what would it be worth to her to know that that she was covered, that she was like, that the system was going to continue to work and be extensible, and you were going to be there if anything went wrong, like the mechanic, or the dealership, would that be worth $1 million over the course of 10 years? And if she says, well, I couldn't afford $1 million up front, but yeah, $100,000 a year would be totally reasonable. And then you could be like, all right, well, let's forget about all these hours and that junk. You just pay me, whatever it is, $9,000, $8,000,
10,000, $10,000 a year.
10,000 a year. So you pay me, let's say 12,
Yeah.
just for round numbers. So you pay me $1,000 a month. I will rebuild the thing from scratch. I'll migrate you from the old system to the new system. I will offer a bug-free guarantee, and she'll have certainty. She'll have peace of mind. She'll have a known expense, monthly expense. I don't know, is she hosting it internally?
Yes.
Yeah, so she doesn't have an ongoing server expense, right? So she'd have the licensing still, I suppose.
Yeah. She doesn't have 12 grand a year, and probably, I mean, it's the sort of thing that, maybe QuickBooks could do the job if it if she had to in a pinch. And I don't know. It's I'm finding it very, very difficult to figure out the value to her,
Well,
particularly
look,
with
if she's
alternative solutions. I mean, QuickBooks would suck, but if it was $10,000 a year for for my solution and a couple hundred dollars a month for QuickBooks, she might choose QuickBooks.
So what you're saying is there's just not that much value there. So and the thing that you're
Well, I'm saying I don't know, but yeah,
Okay.
I
Well,
suspect that's a possibility.
if that were true, if she couldn't spend $1,000 a month on the software system that is driving her business, then there's just not that much value there. And the thing that you're talking about doing is extremely labor intensive. So there's a very narrow window between
Yes, I see what you're
your
saying.
cost and her value. So if she was doing $100 million a year on her own with this system, she would spend $1,000 a month in a second.
Yes, but she's
So,
not.
right. So the conversation that you have with, you could have a conversation with her. It's like, look, I've been pushing for this thing. So in other words, it's not that you're having a hard time imagining a price that would make that imagining a price. It's that you're having a hard time imagining there's a price that is acceptable, which is a different issue. So for the thing that you
Yes.
want to sell, that's the other thing. You have a very strong idea about what the thing is that you want to sell. You could come to her and say, like, look, let's brainstorm this. How much money are you making a year? How much money do you have to spend on your software systems per year? And just come right out and say it. And she says, I can spend $5,000 a year on software systems. You're like, all right, rewrite's out of the question. You're not going to find anybody to do a rewrite for that. So let's think of alternatives. Well, okay, what are my alternatives? Well, you can keep limping along the way we're going, and eventually, at some point, maybe in a year, maybe 3 years, I'm going to say, I'm not going to work on this anymore. It's complete. It's torture.
Right.
Or I can create something that will migrate you to QuickBooks and maybe build things on top of QuickBooks that would make QuickBooks suck less,
Right.
but at least would be more reliable, or whatever. You could build her a node
Yeah, I
solution.
see
You
what you're
create
saying.
plugins for QuickBooks. It's like, let's, since she trusts you, if you release your grip on the solution you want to build and say instead, how much money do you have to spend on this? Just go there. Just go there. How much money do you have to spend on your software system for you? Well, I'd like to spend zero. It's like, okay, spend zero. Well, okay, not zero. Not zero. Well, how much can you spend? How much makes sense to spend on your systems? How much is your, how much is this
Right.
worth?
I've asked her that, and she either can't or won't answer it. She keeps coming back to me saying, "Well, I don't know how much is it going to cost."
$12,000 a year.
She won't answer that question for me.
But if you, so
But
that's a
then if
good
I throw
point.
that at her,
That's a good point. People have a hard time coming up with a number, but if you bounce a number off them, they will instantaneously have a lizard brain reaction to the number. So if we were doing like, if you were saying, look, when I talk to people about pricing a new product I service, and I tell them to get three beta customers to go through it in exchange for feedback, when they're done, I say to the people, to my students, I say, don't ask the beta customer how much they would have paid. Decide how much you want to charge and bounce that number off them, and their reaction is going to tell you the answer. So if you bounce a number off her and you just say, look, I just want to get into the same ballpark here so that I have an idea. I have a particular solution that I think that I'm drawn to, but I don't know if it's really the best fit for you. It'd probably cost it would be $1,000 a month. Is that totally out of the ballpark? And if she's, oh my God, $1,000 a month, you say, okay, out of the ballpark. All right. So forget about the rewrite that I'm talking about, because at a bare minimum, it's going to be $1,000 a month. I mean, that's like nothing. So if, she obviously has a very small business.
Yeah, it is. It's like eight people or something.
Yeah. Eight
That's
people?
yeah.
Not that small. I mean, the revenue must be
Oh.
really low, or she's just incredibly cheap. So, I mean, she must, eight full-time people?
Yeah.
I mean, her payroll is probably 10 times that.
10 times a
10 times 1,000 a month.
thousand.
Yeah.
Oh,
Her rent's
it
probably
would
higher than
be,
that.
but oh, sure. I guess she just, well, yeah, okay. I guess she just doesn't see how, well, I'm going to have to think about that. I'm sort of jumping to some conclusions in my head here. It's quite likely I just haven't asked her the right questions. Well, it's not even likely, it's certainly. But I think there's a problem between there's a disconnect between her concept of the value of what this system does for her business, even though it runs her business. It's essential to her. There is another challenge, and that is that there's always that other person you have to go and check this with. She's got some private investors that she always has to go and ask them, and I'm not allowed. They won't talk to me, so everything has to get past them, and they're much tougher. She's quite agreeable. If it was up to her, she'd probably spend it in a heartbeat. But it isn't. It has to go back to them, and I don't get to talk to them.
All right. So
So that
here's
makes
what,
it a little harder. But
yeah. So in that
I mean,
case,
I don't know if this is really what you wanted on your podcast. This is getting real specific. I mean, definitely happy to keep going if you are.
Yeah, so I would probably, given all of those details, I would probably come up with, and you know a lot about the business, so you could say that you could put together a proposal. Basically, is essentially it's a proposal in my normal sense, but also in the general sense, where you take a proposal and say, like, look, here's the
Sorry,
situation.
I'm back. I lost you for a second there.
Oh, okay.
My audio went weird.
Okay.
You said I know a lot about the business, then I lost you.
Yeah, so you know a lot about the business. You could probably do a situation appraisal, like, look, here's where you currently are, here's where you'd like to go, and here are the risks that we have agreed that you agreed to, that you agree that you recognize these risks. And here are three ways that we could, here are three ways that we could, remediate
You're
the
right.
risk. One would be a rewrite, and I would swing for the fence if you are thinking you're making some assumptions here. So we could do a rewrite and have ongoing maintenance, and it's a number you're almost positive she's going to say no to. Even I would even say positive she will say no to.
Okay.
So 5,000 a month,
Right.
and we'll do the rewrite, maintain the software, launch it, migrate from the old system, integrate it, just on an ongoing basis, and then switch in, at whatever point we'll continue to add features or maintenance mode or whatever. A little bit nervous about the monthly aspect here, but you could just say, or what would that be
Yeah,
for?
I think she's not a fan of that too. I think she wants a, one figure. How much is this going to cost to put down now and get it done?
All right, so how much? So let's just do it right now. What would you charge for a complete rewrite? 100 grand?
No, I mean this doesn't need anything like that, and she won't. I mean that's the sort of number that's she'll definitely say no to.
That's what we're looking for.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, even 50 grand.
50.
There's three pieces to this too, and I'm only talking about the first piece. The other two pieces sell the first piece though, to some degree. I can't do the second piece without rewriting the first piece, so there's that. If we're just talking about the first piece, I threw 10 grand at her as a very ballpark number a couple of months ago, and she hesitated at that but was okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, the big picture here is that this client is too small for you to be bothering with.
Maybe,
A positive, definitely. A positive.
all right, okay, fair enough. I mean, I can do it for that. It's not a huge job.
A rewrite?
It's a small project.
Wait. Okay, if you're saying it's a
Yeah,
small,
yeah.
when you say small project, is it going to take you 4 hours?
No, maybe 30.
A rewrite.
Yeah.
No, I fundamentally disbelieve. I mean, if you have enough experience with them that you know the ins and outs of all of their business logic, and you don't need to do any user testing, and you don't need to do any user training, and you don't need to do any demos, like maybe 30, but it's got to be at least 100. If she has 8 employees that are all using the system, you need to install it. You need to have a test server of some kind. Yeah, if there's no way it's 30, no way. I reject that.
Okay, no, fair enough. I mean, yeah, fair enough. I mean, I know she won't pay 100 for it. I was thinking I'd talk her up to 20 for the first piece. But for the it,
How are you going to migrate from the old system to the new one? I mean, yeah.
yes. You know what? You've made me realize something here. I'm undervaluing. I mentioned to you I've built a framework. It's the framework that lets me build this stuff that quickly. I'm underestimating the value that I'm bringing to that.
No, it's not that. I mean, yes, I suppose, but
Yes.
you're also underestimating the level of effort. Like, I don't care if you can build this, if you could snap your fingers and build a system, you still have to get user feedback and get them onboarded and migrate the data over. I mean, normally you'd have to do all these things. That stuff's not magic.
I've done stuff like that for other clients through my other, through the companies I've worked for, where I've made $5,000 from it, which means they paid them 15 for solutions that are more complex than this.
Complexity is an issue in the cost. So the cost to you. So the complexity is not relevant to the value. Client doesn't care how, I don't care how complex it is to put a roof on my garage. I don't care.
Right.
It's worth something to me or it's not. Yeah,
yes, yes. Just I was answering that in your comment about what it's going to take me to do it.
Yes, it's not, but you used the word value. Value is what the client sees. Cost is what you see. Yeah.
Yeah, wrong word. But yes, for the cost, I can do it in that cost. That's not the issue. You're right that it's small, but if I can make this a high profit, it doesn't really matter how small it is if I'm getting a lot of profit out of it.
True.
And I'm just getting started, remember? So even $20,000 is, that's...
Yeah, it could be a... But yeah.
That's 3 months income.
Okay.
Give or take.
All right, so...
And then there's two more pieces which are bigger. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is getting the most out of that.
Okay. So,
I mean, but you're making some really good points though. I really need to rethink.
It could be.
But that's what you're all about is the value. I need to rethink this from the value point of view.
From her perspective.
From her point. Yeah. And I'm really struggling with that part.
Yeah. 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 And the way to do it is not to think harder. The way to do it is to talk to the other person. So thinking harder is never going to get you there because you're trying to create ESP. So you need to, the only way to do it is to talk to the other person, unless you can do a cold read, which basically is ESP, essentially, which is not the case here, then that is what the why conversation is for, to uncover why they want anything to be different. If she doesn't want anything to be different, she's not going to pay a red cent to get it. So, and I know that you guys have had, you've been saying like, you've been raising the alarm. Your alarm, 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 and maybe she's feeling the heat a little bit in increased hourly fees or delayed release of new features or slow performance that her employees are just like, oh, FileMaker's so slow, or reports not running quick. Maybe she's feeling some pain that you can say, oh, you know that symptom that you're experiencing when you got that. When you asked me for an estimate for the changes and I said, I don't know, and you didn't like that, and you were nervous the whole time that it was going to cost five times more than you were hoping, or all of these things. Like you need to find some kind of symptoms that she's experiencing, pains, like things that she finds distasteful, make her feel bad, things that she might complain about to other people, complain about to her investors. What are those things? And then how bad are they? Like, how bad do you want those things to go away? And then if it's not that bad, then you're like, okay, is it worth $500 to make those things go away? And if she says yes, then you say, okay, switch to QuickBooks and get rid of FileMaker. Solved.
Right.
You might think that QuickBooks would stink, but that's not up to you. Maybe she would think that QuickBooks is fine. So you could,
she wouldn't, I probably shouldn't have even thrown that out, but yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. So think the beauty at coming at a business problem from a really consultative kind of level, like a strategic level or an architectural level, is that you're not married to any particular implementation. You are married to an implementation. So if you want the implementation work, you're only going to suggest solutions that lead to you getting the implementation work, or you're only going to naturally think of, or the only solutions that are naturally occur to you are the ones that you can implement, but there might be better ones that you can't implement. But if you're not getting paid for that bit of advice at the beginning, then it's like, why would you give that advice? You're basically shooting yourself in the foot. So, okay. I think enough about this client. I think
some really good stuff there.
Long and the short of it though, is that it's a fairly small company, but a $10,000 to $20,000 project might be really good for you right now. So maybe there's a way that you can thread the needle and come up with a value to her. Like, what would it be worth to you, dear client, to make these three or four problems go away? And then she says, I don't know. And then you say, well, would it be worth $5,000? And just watch her eyebrows, watch her facial expression. If she's like, oh yeah, like if her eyebrows go down and she's like, oh yeah, totally. And you're like, okay, would it be worth $25,000? She's like, oh no. You know, $25,000, her eyebrows shoot up. So if you can, since you have a relationship and you could just bounce some numbers off of her, if she said to you, you know, yeah, you know, I would be comfortable paying $7,000 if this, this, and the other go away. These three problems leave my life. And then if you can come up with a clever way to deliver those three things for $3,000 of cost to you in time and materials, then yeah, you've got a nice little profitable thing. And maybe it's like import, you know, exporting the data in CSV files from FileMaker and uploading them to QuickBooks. And here's your login. Thanks for the 7,000. So anyway,
That's some very, very good points in there.
cool, cool.
Yeah, I mean, appreciate that, even aside from the
Well, so
podcast. Of
for
course.
in the interest of both of our times and also the dear listener,
Yes.
the I wanna we talked about skills, we talked about markets. We didn't talk too much about passions, but I think that's okay. The thing that I really want to call out, and I'm curious to get feedback from the dear listener about this. The conversation that David and I just had here about this sort of FileMaker project and the small and medium business stuff and those sorts of things. For me, I'm curious if anybody else felt the same way. For me, there was a marked difference between the tone of that conversation and the tone of the sort of short conversation we had about you know, unfortunate sort of single moms in abusive relationships.
Seen his mum, teenagers,
Yeah,
college kids, yep.
right. I
Passions.
suspect. I suspect that I'm going to get a bunch of email that is begging me to tell you to help the women in the abusive relationships and let other people build these FileMaker solutions. But we'll see.
That would be interesting. And you know what? I mean, I don't have to become a billionaire or a millionaire to do that. I just need to pay the bills. So
Yeah.
if I can build a business that's going to pay the bills and help those people, I would be happy. So
I
I'll
mean,
welcome any suggestions from those readers on how to go about
yes,
it
exactly.
listeners. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, thanks
Yeah.
for listening. Hopefully, you know, it sounds like this has been somewhat helpful, at least
For me, for
for you,
sure.
David.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, I will see you, David, back in the group coaching Slack. But dear listener, thanks for joining us. Kind of a marathon call, but hopefully it's okay. And we will see you next time on Ditching Hourly. Bye. Hey, Jonathan again. Do you have questions about how to improve your business? Things like value pricing your work instead of billing for your time, or positioning yourself as the go-to person in your space, or maybe productizing your services so you never have to have another awkward sales call or spend hours writing another custom proposal. Book a one-on-one coaching call with me and get answers to these questions and others in the time it takes you to get ready for work in the morning. Best of all, you're covered by my 100% satisfaction guarantee. If at the end of the call you don't feel like it was worth it, just say the word and I'll refund your purchase in full. To book your one-on-one coaching call, go to jonathanstark.com/call, call. That URL again is jonathanstark.com/call. Hope to see you there.